We are in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 25, verses 13 through 30. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them and made 5 talents more. So also he who had 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also who had the 2 talents came forward, saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also who had received the 1 talent came forward saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. But his master answered him, You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In the place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
No one likes delays. If you want to contradict me on that statement, please come forward after the service. I'll talk some sense into you. No one likes delays. I can prove it. What is the most feared word as anyone walks through any airport? Delayed. What is the most feared word anyone can see as they drive east on Interstate 64 approaching the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel? Delayed. No one likes delays. And yet we all experience them. Delays between our medical tests and the results, delays between our surgery and our knowledge of its success or failure, delays between our actions that broke trust and our opportunity to do new action so that trust can be restored, delays between the wandering of our children and their return. No one likes delays. And yet we all experience them. So today we fix our eyes on Jesus the teacher for the 2nd week in a row, looking at Jesus' parables, where in this parable of the talents, we will see Jesus the teacher teach us how to deal with delay. The story is about a master who goes away on a journey. The master does not state at the beginning how long his journey will be, but you can see from verse 19 of our passage, now after a long time, the master returned. This was a serious delay that of the master's return that these servants faced. And while the master was away, he entrusted to his servants different amounts of his property. And the servants were there with the property, wondering, what should we do with the master's property while the master is away? They each do different things with the property. The first two servants invest it wisely and over a long period of time. The third servant buries it in the ground, and at the return of the master after the long day has nothing he has produced except for what the master has already entrusted to him. Now, as Jesus tells this story, let's be reminded of what a parable is. I talked about this last week. Parable literally means to cast alongside. And what Jesus does when he tells a parable is he offers a simple truth from everyday life, and he just tosses it alongside the deeper truth of the gospel. And as you're disarmed by this simple truth from everyday life, it's as if Jesus is saying, well, if you're looking at this simple truth, why don't you look over at the deeper truth of the gospel as well? I read this definition of parables last week, but I forgot the slide, so I brought the slide this week. This is from a man named C.H. Dodd, who did a massive study on parables in the New Testament, and he writes this, at its simplest, and you're going to see his definition is not that simple, but I do love his definition. At its simplest, the parable is a metaphor or simile drawn from nature or common life, arresting the hearer by its vividness or strangeness and leaving the mind in sufficient doubt to its precise application to tease the mind into active thought. And so as Rich was reading the parable of the talents, as I just retold the parable of the talents, Jesus wants our minds to be teased into active thought. What is the simple truth he is trying to share right next to the deeper truth of the gospel? And here's what I think it is. The master's delay is the servant's opportunity to practice faithfulness. The master's delay is the servant's opportunity to practice faithfulness. Simple enough. Of course, this is the servant's opportunity. The master is gone. He's entrusted them with his property. You see two servants that faithfully execute on that trust and one servant who does not. Of course, this is their opportunity to practice faithfulness with the master's resources. And as we'll see a little bit later, this is a great opportunity. It is a fantastic opportunity for the master's, for the servants to practice faithfulness during their master's delay. But remember, this is only the simple truth that Jesus has cast alongside the deeper truth of the gospel. You see, in Matthew 25, verse 14, the start of Jesus telling this parable, he says, for it will be like a man going on a journey. It will be like. What will be like? The pronoun it here in 25:14 refers all the way back to chapter 25, verse 1, where Jesus tells another parable about the delay of the kingdom. He says, the kingdom of heaven will be like. It's Jesus' introduction to the parable saying, remember, I'm just telling you this story to tease your mind into active thought about a much deeper truth from the gospel. And so here it is. Jesus' delay is our opportunity to practice faithfulness. Jesus, the true master, Jesus, the true king, he has ascended into heaven. He sits at the right hand of the throne of God, and we await his glorious return. And the question is, what do we do while we're waiting? Last week's parable, we talked about the state of our hearts. I believe this week's parable, Jesus wants to talk to us about the state of our hands. Jesus' delay is our opportunity to practice faithfulness. And practicing faithfulness is quite a large concept. So let's try to break it down into some smaller pieces and ask the question, what does practicing faithfulness look like? What would it look like to practice faithfulness during Jesus' delayed return? The first thing I think we can learn from the parable is this. Accepting the assignments Jesus gives us without hesitation. Practicing faithfulness looks like accepting the assignments Jesus gives us without hesitation. Look at the beginning of our parable again. Verses 14 through 16. For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. And he who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. The key word there is at once. And notice the master doesn't even give the servants instructions. He instinctively knows if the master gives me this opportunity, I must accept it. I must accept this assignment without hesitation. And he moves at once into the marketplace to begin trading with the talents. Contrast this with the third servant who does nothing with the talents and the master's response to him in verse 26. But the master answered him, "You wicked and slothful servant." Now, when we think about the word slothful in our language, we think about the word lazy. That's not what it means as Matthew is recording Jesus' parable here. The word slothful, we think, well, I would never be slothful. I would never be lazy. But in context here, the Greek word that Matthew uses, slothful, literally means hesitating. The servant is slow. He doesn't move with any kind of haste or speed. It's not so much that he's lazy. He's hesitating. He's slow. Maybe you think to yourself, well, I don't hesitate with the assignments that Jesus has given me. More often, maybe you might say, I'm just frustrated with the assignments Jesus gives me. And sometimes that frustration leads to hesitation. And sometimes I do it, but I'm still so frustrated with what Jesus has asked me to do or a commandment he has given us to follow. There is a refrain that gets repeated all throughout J.R.R. Tolkien's series, The Lord of the Rings. And it actually gets faithfully reproduced fairly well in the movies as well. It's a refrain I come back to often when I think about my need to move into the assignments that Jesus has given me. The main character, Frodo, in the story is called a ring bearer. He's carrying a ring that represents all the forces of evil and darkness in this world, and he's got to carry it to the fires of Mordor where it can be destroyed to save all of Middle-earth. It's a great allegory about sin in this world and its effects on people. And as he carries this ring, it does all sorts of difficult and dangerous things to him. It's this heavy burden that he carries, and he cries out throughout the books and in the movie with these words, "I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened." It's so honest. "I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened." And his mentor, Gandalf the Wizard, replies, "So do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us." I think we can all join in Frodo's refrain with something in our life that Jesus has asked us to face. "I wish the disease had never come to me. I wish the court case had never come to me. I wish my spouse's unfaithfulness had never come to me. I wish the loss of friendships had never come to me. I wish the broken heart had never come to me. I wish my decisions about an aging parent that I have to make, I wish those decisions had never come to me." A lot of kids at the outside service, I said, I wish online school had never come to me, and they all cheered. Personally, I reflected on this in my own life this week. I said to myself, I wish the need to have an online congregation had never come to me. I am thrilled that we can worship in this season outside, inside, and online, and I welcome everyone to worship however you are able to worship with us. It is not that I am frustrated with the online congregation. It is I wish the need for it had never come to me. I thought about going through the hiring process with the elders and the interviews that we had, and if they had said, part of the strategic direction that we have for the chapel, Travis, is to start an online congregation, I would have looked at them and said, you're talking to the wrong guy. That may be a fine idea. It's just not something that I think I'd be able to do or that I have the desire to do. I would have been honest with the elders in that moment. And yet here we are, months and months into the need to have an online congregation. I still feel radically unprepared to carry that reality out. I thought to myself, I wish pastoring in the midst of a divisive culture had never come to me. I often think about what it would have been like to be a pastor in the 30s or 40s or 50s or maybe even the good old 1990s. But I graduated seminary in 2007, I came on staff at the chapel in 2007. I graduated seminary in 2008. 2007 was the year that the iPhone was invented and made the access to all kinds of information silos readily available in anyone's pocket. I don't disparage technology. I think we can use it productively, but I think we have found ways as a culture to use it unproductively. Many of us live in these information silos, and I pray often for the unity of the church because I see the divisiveness of our culture invading the church more and more. And so I often cry out, I wish that the need to pastor in 2020 hadn't come to me. Maybe 1920, but there were issues then, like the great stock market crash of 1929 and the depression that followed. And so that is why Gandalf's words are wise. So do all who live to see times such as these. But that is not for us to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time we have been given. How can we faithfully not hesitate with the assignments that Jesus has given us? Whatever hour I wish the fill in the blank had never come to me statement is, Jesus gives us the example of the man with 5 talents. Who went at once, because practicing faithfulness looks like accepting the assignments Jesus gives us without hesitation. Number 2, practicing faithfulness looks like resisting the temptation to be disgruntled or distracted by what other believers have been given. Look at verse 17 of our passage. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. How easy it would have been for the man with 2 talents to say, well, why didn't you give me 5 talents, master? What am I supposed to do with 2 talents? This man has such a tremendous advantage over me. How can I trade with just 2 talents? We see this attitude, we see the possibility for this attitude in the parable of the talents. We see this attitude played out in the relationship between Peter and John in John chapter 21. Let me read to you that scene. Jesus is speaking directly to Peter, and he says this, "Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go." Parenthetically, John adds as he writes the gospel, this he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. After saying this, he, that's Jesus, said to him, that's Peter, "Follow me." And what does Peter do immediately? Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, "Lord, what about this man?" Jesus said to him, "If it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me." Peter gets distracted by the assignment that someone else has been given. And when he gets distracted by the assignment that someone else has been given, he gets disgruntled by the assignment that he has been given. But practicing faithfulness means we resist the temptation to be disgruntled or distracted by what other believers have been given. And here's where it is important to realize what a talent is. See, we have an issue as we read this passage in English because the word talent in English means something quite different than what the word talent meant to Jesus' audience. Our word talent in English actually comes directly from this parable. We created the word right out of it, out of this parable. We think of it as a gift or an ability that we've been given or entrusted with. But when Jesus says the word talent, what it means and what the original hearers would have heard is a monetary unit. A talent is money, and a talent is a staggeringly large sum of money. A talent is 20 years worth of wages. Now, it's 20 years worth of wages for a laborer, but still, 20 years worth of wages is 20 years worth of wages. So the man with 5 talents has 100 years worth of wages in his pocket. The man with 2 has 40 years worth of wages in his pocket. The man with 1 has 20 years worth of wages. In other words, each servant has been entrusted with more than enough by the master to do the work that the master is calling them to do. And every believer has been given more than enough by Jesus to do the work Jesus is asking us to do. The Apostle Paul tells us about what Jesus has given us in the book of Colossians chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. The Apostle Paul writes this, "The mystery hidden for ages and generations, but now revealed to his saints. To them God chose to make known how great among the Gentiles are the riches of the glory of this mystery, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory." That God has not just entrusted to us his resources, God has entrusted to us his very self in the person of Jesus Christ through the power of the Holy Spirit. Jesus Christ lives in all those who profess faith in him. This gift, this resource, is far greater than even 100 years worth of wages, for it is God himself dwelling inside us. And this is why practicing faithfulness looks like resisting the temptation to be disgruntled or distracted by what other believers have been given. Each servant has been entrusted with more than enough to get the job done, to do the work, to invest the resources. It's adequate. 20 years worth of wages certainly was adequate. And every believer has been given more than enough because we have been entrusted with God himself in the person of Jesus Christ through the power of the Holy Spirit living in us. Which brings me to the third thing that practicing faithfulness looks like as we take this more than enough that God has entrusted to us to do the work that he has given us to do. We must see that practicing faithfulness looks like taking risks to multiply Jesus' work in the world. Taking risks to multiply Jesus' work in the world. You see the whole scene in verses 20 to 27. I'll just highlight verses 20 and 22. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 more. Verse 22. And he also who had the 2 talents came forward saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more. No one doubles their investment without taking considerable risk. Talk to any investment professional, and they will tell you if your goal is to double your money, your capital, your resources will be at risk. And in this situation, it had to be quite nerve-wracking because these resources did not belong to them. They knew that they belonged to the master, but they knew that if they were going to practice faithfulness in this moment, they would have to take risks with the master's resources. And as I talked to various investment professionals this week, just to get some sense about what these servants must have been going through, one of them said to me, there's no way it all just went up and to the right from the start. Whenever you're trying to double your investment, there's always a moment where your investment gets lower than your original investment. And you have to decide in that moment if you panic or if you stay the course. You say, I knew I was taking a risk. I will tolerate the risk. And the longer period of time you're willing to tolerate the risk, actually the greater chance you will have on returning, on a great return, a 100% return on that investment. I imagine these servants that doubled their money having such a moment, saying to themselves, what if the master returns right now? Have we been unfaithful servants because we put our master's resources at risk? You get the answer to the story in verse 25 and some of the surprising words of the master when he speaks to the third servant. The third servant reports fear that led to him not being willing to put the resources at risk. He says this in verse 25. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours. Now, most of us know the end of this story and how Jesus records the master's response, but I just want you to pause for a moment and wipe your memory from ever having heard this story before and just hear it as the original hearers would have heard it. The man said, I hid your money in the ground. Here, have back what is yours. What Jesus' original hearers would have heard is this. First century rabbis often advised people that storing valuables in the ground was the safest thing to do with them. It was prudent and wise because they advised people against putting money on deposit with bankers due to the risk involved. You see, a first century banker was not like Town Bank on Monticello Avenue, where you had these beautiful pillars, these strong columns signifying, we know what you're doing, and by the way, we have FDIC insurance. And so no matter what happens, if you put your money on deposit with us, you will be able to come back and get your money one day. In the first century, bankers were often money changers in the marketplace. Bankers were often businessmen going out, trading, making deals. It was quite a risky thing to put your money on deposit with a banker, which is why first century rabbis often said, here's what you should do instead. Bury it in the ground where only you know it is, and that way nothing will ever happen to it. And remember last week as we fixed our eyes on Jesus the teacher, we learned that surprise is a key element of parables. And so here's the surprise to this parable. Knowing the first century rabbi's advice, Jesus then says these words, but the master answered him, you wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers. And at my coming, I should have received what was my own with interest. Jesus says, you should have taken some risk. This is what I believe our church has set out to do with our Next 40 campaign and our three initiatives that represent the direction in which Jesus is calling us to move as a church. A lot of the congregants have asked me about the Next 40 campaign during this season. I said, we've got a great spot in the spring where we're gonna speak extensively about it. Get through this public health situation, and then come the spring, we want to make sure we're looking at that again, because Jesus is calling us. Jesus calls all believers to take risks in order to grow his work in this world. It is a risky thing to take both people from a congregation and resources from a congregation and send them to another part of your community. It's a risky thing to take the last piece of undeveloped real estate in your church and say, we are going to build this out for people who do not yet come to the chapel, to welcome more people with different kinds of abilities in our midst. It's a risky thing to send your resources halfway across the world to give them to people, to invest them in a community, in a culture that has 0.5% of the population as professing believers. Is God going to be able to produce fruit in a country like Thailand? Those are risky things to do. But practicing faithfulness means taking risks to multiply Jesus' work in the world. And we trust and believe in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, we'll see how God has grown each of those initiatives. Yet so many of us don't want to tolerate the risk. We have a hard time tolerating the risk, especially short term. So let me just illustrate this point one other way. My daughter, Leela, this past year, she played upward basketball. Here's a picture of Leela. She was really into defense. She's in the yellow shirt playing upward basketball. It was her first team sport. She swims in the summer, and I know swimming's a team sport, but not like basketball is a team sport. And she said to me, Dad, I want to make 10 baskets during the season, 10 baskets. And so we got to the last game, and she was sitting right on the doorstep at 10 baskets, but she hadn't made the 10 baskets, and she started the game off 0 for 4. She took 4 shots and she didn't make it. So next time she got the ball, what do you think? What do you imagine me as her father said? Don't take the risk, Leela. It'll be too painful if you don't make the shot. Pass the ball to someone else. It's not what I said. She got the ball and I said, shoot the rock. Chuck it. Put it up. Get it close to the hoop. Come on. You got this. And I think that's what our Heavenly Father is doing when he sees believers with a risk to take. He doesn't say, oh, be careful. So concerned that you might put the resources I've entrusted you at risk. He says, shoot the rock. Make a basket. Drive to the hoop. Take a risk. Multiply my work in this world. As I talked to Leela last night, asking her permission if I could tell this story, she said yes. And she said, by the way, Dad, I made 12 baskets that season. And the reason she made 12 baskets is because she kept on taking the risk of taking the shot. The simple truth is that the master's delay is the servant's opportunity to practice faithfulness. The deeper truth of the gospel is Jesus' delay is our opportunity to practice faithfulness. So what assignment do you need to accept without hesitation? What have you kind of been delaying on it and stepping back and going slow? What temptation of comparison do you need to resist? What risk is Jesus asking you to take? As you answer these questions this week, remember the servants in the story practice faithfulness in their master's absence. We practice our faithfulness in our master, Jesus Christ's presence. He said in Matthew chapter 28, surely I am with you always, even to the very end of the age. The servants in the story practice faithfulness in response to the gift of the master's resources. We practice our faithfulness in response to the gift of the master himself. Jesus Christ took his assignment from the Father without hesitation. Jesus Christ resisted the temptation of Satan, who offered him kingship apart from suffering. Jesus Christ did not merely risk his life, but gave up his life, that through faith in him we might be offered life in him. Jesus' faithfulness far outweighs even the 10 talents that the first servant ends up with. 200 years worth of wages. Let's respond in the midst of Jesus' delay by practicing faithfulness to him.